It is now 8 o'clock. It's time for the personal computer show. FM, also streaming on the web at WBAI.org. Also streaming on the web at PCRadioshow.org. And this is the Personal Computer Show. Yes, that's right. And it is December the 5th, 2007. Take it away, Hank, sir.
Thank you, Stevie. And joining me in the studio tonight is Michael Horowitz, our curmudgeon resident webmaster. We have Stevie DB, our sound effect man, or wannabe sound effect man. And way up in the northern parts of Percocet, we have Dr. Alfred Poor. How you doing, Alfred?
I'm doing fine.
And the weather is in the 80s?
Not quite.
It's like more like 20,
maybe,
right?
Maybe in the southern part of Percocet,
yeah.
but not here.
And we have a very special guest, and we have Dr. Richard M. Stallman. Richard, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, we're going to get to you in about a few minutes. We just have to, just get some important matters out. And Michael, there is a problem with QuickTime?
Yes, there's a serious bug in QuickTime, one which would let the bad guys break into your computer. And I mention it because there's no fix for it. In fact, according to Brian Krebs of the Washington Post, it could be weeks until Apple issues a fix for it. There is also sample code on the Internet for all the bad guys to download and learn how to exploit this particular problem. So it's might very well be a prudent thing to do to uninstall QuickTime on your machine. The only downside to that is I believe iTunes needs it or requires it or wants it. I'm not 100% sure, but if you're not an iTunes user, for sure, I think it's a good thing to uninstall QuickTime for the time being.
We have another item, and that is, as reported in PC Magazine, is that there's a website called yourdigitalelectronics.com. And they say that if you want to order anything, they don't accept credit cards. They ask you to send money to Italy, and that you must pay a minimum of $500, and they'll keep the rest as credit if it's under $500. Hey, Alfred, would you go buy anything from this firm?
Not from what you've said so far.
Do you know people are using this website?
Well, sure.
Because
P.T. Barnum said.
Because the prices are unbelievable.
And if they're unbelievable, I don't believe it.
To be sure, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's one born every minute, so.
Yep. Hey, listen, we do have one major item that really people should take note of. I know that I have a ThinkPad, and some people call it Lenovo ThinkPad or IBM ThinkPad. And IBM just sued a company a couple of days ago. The company is, I hate to say it, but they're located in Flushing, New York, right out of my backyard. It's called Shentech, S-H-E-N-T-E-C-H, for selling laptop batteries that has the IBM logo. It looks like the IBM real thing, but they're fakes. And what's happening is overheating, and in some cases, it actually causes a fire. And
we all know laptop batteries can be extremely dangerous.
So,
they're not cell phone batteries.
Well,
no, it turns out not cell phone batteries.
Yeah.
We decided not to mention that on the air, and that was the right thing to do.
Right. No, seriously, I know that a number of people have ThinkPads, and you know what? You buy from an authorized dealer, or buy straight from IBM, or straight from Lenovo. I guess they've been getting complaints that the new batteries were heating up very quickly, and they're all fakes. And I hate to say it, but China is noted for coming up with a whole lot of genuine fakes. I use the word genuine fakes in a tongue-in-cheek.
That is a genuine copy of a fake imitation.
Yeah. Hey, listen, tonight we have Dr. Richard M. Stallman. Richard, how you doing? What, you're up in Connecticut?
I'm in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Oh, Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Cambridgia.
And how's the weather there, anyway?
Well, it's nice and cold, which is much better than being hot.
Oh, okay. I see. The thing is, I love warm weather because I have low blood pressure, and boy, I feel it in my bones, you know.
Well, I hate hot weather, and I can deal with cold weather. You know, when it gets cold, you can always deal with that by putting on more clothing. But when it's too hot, once you're nude, there's nothing you can do.
Not much left to take off.
That's now, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. You guys never heard of taking a cold shower, right? Hey, Richard,
it's hard to type on a computer while taking a cold shower.
Richard, let me ask you a couple of things now. You know, we've been telling everyone that, you know, if you're interested in GNU Linux, you know, we got a real person that you can talk to and ask all the questions you want to know about GNU Linux. Now, I use the term GNU Linux. First of all, can you explain to us what is GNU and why GNU Linux?
Well, in 1983, I decided I wanted to continue using computers and live in freedom. And that was impossible because all the operating systems were proprietary. They all kept the users divided and helpless. So the only way anybody could use computers and have freedom was to develop another operating system. I said, let's develop an operating system called GNU, which stands for GNU's Not Unix. And so we
that,
had this
that is recursive,
done.
By the way.
Right.
Because it begs the question,
humor.
What do you mean by GNU?
Exactly. It's programmer's humor. So in 1990, when the GNU system was almost complete, there was one important component still missing. That was the kernel, which is the program that allocates the machine's resources to all the other programs you run. And so we started developing a kernel, but ours didn't work out, and a different kernel called Linux ended up working out. So the system people use is GNU with Linux as the kernel, or GNU/Linux, or GNU plus Linux.
So you're saying that the press really is kind of shortchanging you because the proper term is GNU Linux.
Well, they ought to give us equal mention, I think, since we started it all and we did the biggest part of the job. But the most important thing about this is that when people think the system is Linux, they think it all comes from the worldview of Mr. Torvalds, who is the author of Linux, the kernel. And when they think he did it all, they think that his worldview is the one they should listen to. And his worldview is an apolitical engineer's worldview. He says he values having good software and doesn't value freedom. Well, you know, he's got the right to present his views, but if people follow those views, we're likely to lose our freedom. Because if you don't defend your freedom, as, you know, with one look at Bush will show you, you're likely to lose it. So we need people to be aware that the system was developed for the sake of freedom so that they'll learn that there is freedom that they could have or could lose. Most computer users don't even know this. I mean, consider the news about QuickTime, the idea that QuickTime might allow the bad guys to get into your machine. Well, the bad guys are already in your machine if you're using macOS. In fact, Apple has set it up in macOS 10 so that they can force upgrades in your software at any time. So
really? I hadn't heard that. So they really are copying Microsoft's bad habits.
I don't know if they may have even done it first.
Interestingly, in the latest version of the Mac OS, they've turned off the firewall, so they can basically do anything.
Exactly. And it shows they're the bad guys. They're already designing your software, well, what they hope you will use, because I wouldn't use it, to restrict you and control you. It has digital restrictions management. That's in iTunes, for instance, which means it is software designed not to serve you, but to keep the chains on you. And that's possible because it's proprietary software. See, proprietary software means that the developer controls what it does and you're helpless. And usually it means you're forbidden to share it with anybody else, so they've kept you divided and helpless.
Let me ask you this. You are also a big proponent of free software movement. What exactly do you mean by free software movement?
Well, the free software movement is the movement that says you deserve software that respects your freedom. It's free as in freedom, not free as in price.
Oh,
so think
okay.
of free speech, not free beer. This is not a movement for zero price software. We don't really care about that question at all. It's a side issue. This is a movement where we demand software that respects our freedom, and the way we get it is we write it. So,
and to quote you from your own website, what you mean is that the user, the computer user, is free to run the software, change the software, redistribute the software, either in its original form or its changed form, and even free to sell it.
Yes.
Totally free as in freedom.
Right. Now, it's important to realize that being free in a practical sense to change the software requires access to the source code. If all you've got is a binary, well, they might say you're allowed to change this, but it's so hard that it's almost impossible really to do it in any useful way. But therefore, free software normally means you have the access to the source code and the freedom to study the source code and change it. So with free software, the users control what it does. Now, the proprietary software developers, they've done something wrong to you just by restricting you in this way. But then they have the temptation to take advantage of that first level of unjust power to do something else nasty, like design the software to refuse to obey you. This is what Apple has done and what Microsoft has done, and Google and the BBC do this, the TiVo does this. Digital restrictions management means the software is designed specifically to restrict you, to stop you from doing what you want with the files on your machine.
Richard, let me ask you this now. The free software movement is really maybe in parallel, but separate from the open source movement.
That's right. Although I'm not sure I'd use the word movement to describe the open source philosophy.
Okay.
You see,
how do you differ?
Well, in the 1990s, as the GNU plus Linux system was getting in popularity, lots of people started to like it just for its practical advantages. You know, it was powerful and reliable, and of course, you didn't have to pay a license fee to run it because anybody could redistribute it to you. And so people started recommending it and boosting it for that reason. So there were two different philosophies in our community. There were those of us who were working in the free software movement, for whom freedom, and in particular the freedom to help other people, was the vital thing. And then there were the people who cited practical values of convenience, like Mr. Torvalds, for instance. So eventually the people with that second view, they decided to stop talking about free software, and they coined the term open source. And now, of course, there are lots of companies involved with free software, and that's okay. You know, everybody's got the right to sell copies. We've never been against having companies involved. But a lot of those companies also wanted to be involved in proprietary software products. So they didn't want their potential customers to learn to insist on freedom and say no to those proprietary products. So those companies found the term open source like a gift from heaven, a way they could talk about the system and never mention freedom or even call to mind the idea of freedom. So they, since they didn't want to focus on your freedom to use and control your own software, they had to come up with a different focus. So they came up with a focus that's somewhat useful on development models. They discovered that if the developers let users change the software and redistribute the software, that the users are likely to correct lots of problems. And so they started to say that they recommended open source software because their development model led to more powerful and reliable software most of the time. Well, if that's true, I think it's a nice bonus, but it's not as important as freedom. You know, I'd rather take a less powerful, less reliable program that respects my freedom, because at least we could fix it. We could make it more reliable. We could make it more powerful. But if we start from the program whose license forbids us to change it, then even if it's powerful, there's nothing we can do to get our freedom.
When you talk about license to change it, you're talking about the EULAs or EULAs that is sort of like you agree to it once you open the package. And,
well, yes.
And in order to know what's in there, you have to open the package, and once you open it, you already accepted it. That's really.
Well, I would never even. I'd never accept anything that even comes within a mile of like that.
Well, let me ask you something.
Because
now.
You see, that's a practice. That's an additional nasty practice that they do with non-free software. But free software doesn't have an EULA. Free software just has a statement that gives that says the copyright holders say that you're allowed to copy and change this.
Well, let me ask you this now. On your website, you have what is called the GNU, a whole bunch of statements or policies. You may not call it a EULA, but you do have guidelines as how you define the software, right?
Well, the definition of free software isn't a rule that we make people follow. That's just a definition. If you do that, then we say the software is free. If you don't do that, we say it's not free. But we do have licenses of a different kind. They're not end-user license agreements. They're not contracts. Free software is normally copyrighted because everything that's written is automatically copyrighted. So how do you make it free? How do you, once it's copyrighted, how do you give users the four freedoms? To the freedom to run the program as they wish, the freedom to study and change the source code and make it do what they wish, the freedom to distribute exact copies.
Now, Richard, let me just interrupt a moment. Mm-hmm. I remember back in 1975, that was the first year of publication of Dr. Dobbs Journal, and I had written a number of articles there, and people were using the term copyleft, and they were defining copyleft as here's a source code, and they say copyleft means it's in public domain, do with it what you like, but make sure that whatever you do, you have to publish it.
Well, I never knew about that because I never used microcomputers. I wasn't interested. I had big computers to play with at MIT. So I never knew that anybody was using the term copyleft in 1975 until you told me.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently that had been forgotten by 1985 when I started using the term. But I was raising the question, given copyright law, how do you make a program free? And the answer is the copyright holders make a statement saying, we authorize you to run the program, change it, redistribute it with or without changes.
And
Richard,
to sell it, too.
That statement giving you those freedoms is the license of a free program. It's not something you click on to accept. So it's not an end-user license agreement, which is a contract. This is a unilateral grant of permission by the copyright holders.
Yeah, but
Richard, what happens, this is Alfred, what happens if somebody takes the software, modifies it, and then copyrights their modified version?
Well, the modified version is always copyrighted. Every modified version of everything is automatically copyrighted.
Okay.
The point is that since it's free software, they're not violating copyright law merely by distributing their modified version because the copyright holders say you can do that. Now,
they still retain the rights to protect their version.
Well, I don't like the word protect because protect from what? That's a biased propaganda term.
Well, I was thinking from misuse.
Well, what is misuse, right? What a proprietary software developer calls misuse, that's people sharing and helping each other. That's people controlling their own lives. But those people call these things misuse. Well, I think they're wrong.
Okay.
I don't think they should be protected from our freedom. On the other hand, what I call misuse of my software is if somebody tries to make it proprietary, that is not free software. So if somebody wants to take the program I wrote and modify it and redistribute that as free software, that's great. He should be able to do that, and I make sure he's legally allowed to do that. But if he wanted to modify the software and then give you just a binary, making you sign an end-user license agreement that's going to restrict you, that's what I call misuse.
And
so I've designed
what recourse do you have at that point?
I've designed a license that says he can't do that.
Okay.
In other words, I told you that the free software license is a statement under copyright law giving people permission to copy and modify and distribute and so on.
But,
well,
Richard,
the one I use is designed that says you can copy and redistribute as free software, but you're not allowed to make it proprietary. So if somebody tried to make my software proprietary, he would be infringing copyright, and I could sue him.
Richard, let me just interject. But in reality, although we have many people doing IT work or information processing and so on, only a very tiny percentage can really program. The rest really don't know how to program.
Well, there are over a million contributors to free software, so it can't be that few.
A million is
not...
Well,
that's worldwide.
Well, you're talking about worldwide, though, right?
Yeah.
That's not a big number at all.
Yes, it is. A million is a pretty big number, and they've produced something like 15,000 free software packages. So please don't exaggerate how few we are. Oh. Sure, I wish there were more. I wish that everybody developing software would make it free software. But that's not the obstacle to freedom. The obstacle is that some big companies, with the help from their puppet government in Washington, are trying to bully various countries to adopt laws that can prohibit free software.
Well, let me ask you this. You had referred to programming as like a cooking recipe. What do you mean by that?
Well, a recipe is a lot like a program because they're both... Each one is a series of steps to carry out to get some practical result you want. So they're both functional works that are made up of a series of steps. And now this is interesting because if you use a work to do a job in your life, then if you don't control the work, you don't control your life. So all the works that you use to do a functional job have got to be free. For the same ethical reasons apply to all of them. The same ethical reasons why a program has to be free also say that a recipe has to be free, which means that if you've got a copy of the recipe, you've got to be free to cook it when you wish. You've got to be free to study it and change it to make the food you wish. You've got to be free to redistribute it. And you've got to be free to distribute copies of your modified versions. Well, guess what? Practically speaking, you are. And cooks do these things all the time. So recipes really are like free software.
Okay, let me ask you a personal question now. Do you use a personal computer?
Yes.
What operating system is on it?
I'm using the GNU/Linux system.
Which implementation? There's so many implementations.
Right, and most of them offer some non-free software for inclusion, for installation, and so I wouldn't recommend them. So I use the one that I'm proud to answer. I use GNUSense, which is an entirely free distribution.
What is it? GNU, S-E-N-S-E? Or what?
Yes, GNUSENSE. It's more programmer's humor. But the point is, I'm happy to recommend GNUSense because I know when I recommend GNUSense, I'm not recommending any non-free software.
Well, let me ask, if someone was to use that, is there enough capability to do some of the things that people are doing today, like wireless access?
Sure.
Oh, they're all drivers?
You've got to be careful which wireless card you get. And if you look on FSF.org in the hardware resource pages, you can see which wireless cards work with free software.
Because, what is driving this to people having a second or third or fourth look at using something that's not Windows or even Apple is that you have a lot of low-cost software, you know, the one laptop per child.
Well, maybe, but I'm not concerned with the cost.
Yeah, I know, but what's happening, though, is that people...
in this area.
Right, but what's happening is that people are saying, hey, wait a minute, these operating systems are going wild with cost. I want to look at a different one. So people are now looking at GNU Linux-based systems now.
Well, not only that, the non-free operating systems are getting nastier and nastier. I mean, just being non-free is nasty enough, but now more and more they're designed to attack you or restrict you. Take a look at badvista.org to see just how nasty Windows Vista is.
Well, just for the record, everyone on this show recommends not using Vista, every single one of us. We
right.
don't agree on anything. We don't even agree what day of the week it is, but we do agree on that.
Now, of course... Really, you've got to defenestrate your computer, which means either kick Windows out of the computer or throw your computer out the window. But if you're not ready to do that yet, at least don't go to Windows Vista. But why is Windows Vista so bad? It's because more and more It's more than the previous versions of Windows. It's designed to stop you from doing things. Well, why can they do that? It's because Microsoft starts out having power over you. Microsoft decides what goes in the system and what doesn't. Microsoft decides what it can do and what it can't do.
And they have even updated the system when you specifically told them not to, which
right.
is an unbelievable state
and,
of affairs.
But it's the same with Apple. Apple decides what is in macOS and what's not. And there's no way to override that. So if Apple wants to program it to stop you from doing something, the only way you can escape from that is don't use macOS.
But this
shows you the fundamental evil of non-free software. The developer has power over the users. And developers shouldn't have power. Nobody should have power.
Richard, we have a few minutes before we go for a break, and I hope you can stay with us because
sure.
we do take phone calls then. But before we go for the break, I have a question for you. What do you think of Amazon Kindle?
Oh, you mean the swindle?
No, Kindle.
Swindle.
Why don't you explain to the audience what you mean by that?
Do you want me to explain or do you just say you want to?
No, why don't you explain
okay.
it?
Okay. Well, you see, the swindle is an e-book reader, and the purpose of e-books is to take away the traditional freedoms of readers, the freedoms to do things like borrow a book from the public library or sell a book to a used bookstore or lend a book to your friend or buy a book anonymously, paying cash so that nobody knows what you're reading. And even the freedom to keep the book for years or decades and read it as many times as you like and eventually pass it on to your children who might then read it too and so on. These are the traditional freedoms of people who use printed books. And all the e-book readers, not just the Swindle, but Sony's machine, they all are designed to put on digital restrictions management and take away these freedoms. So we have to look at those products and see, this is designed to separate us from our freedom, and we have to refuse to use them.
Richard, you're carrying the spear. You're leading the way. How can people learn and find more information on what you're saying?
Well, for more information on digital restrictions management, things like the Amazon swindle, take a look at defectivebydesign.org. For the GNU operating system and the free software movement, look at GNU.org. And if you're interested in joining the Free Software Foundation, or if you want to look at our directory of 5,000 mature, usable free software packages, or our directory of which hardware products work with free software, look at FSF.org, Free Software Foundation, that stands for.
Are there any recommendations?
Yes. Well, we don't try to say which ones are technically better in these hardware products. We just want to tell you which ones do work with free software. Now, the others might work, but they would require a non-free driver, and we're trying to put an end to that.
Just to be clear for users who are not versed in Unix and Linux and GNU, all versions of Linux can be obtained without financial charge.
Actually, that's not true, and they're not versions of Linux anyway. What you're thinking of are the distributions of the GNU/Linux system, and they contain a lot more than Linux. They contain the GNU system, and they contain thousands of other programs, too. Many people mistakenly call them Linux distributions, but that's a misnomer. In any case, they're not all available gratis, because remember, free software is a matter of freedom, not price.
Right. I was just to make sure people understood that you can get a Linux distribution.
No, they're not.
The new Linux.
It's not a Linux distribution. I know you've heard many
right.
people call it that, but they're being unfair to us. Now, some of them are available gratis over the net, and meanwhile, you can probably buy CDs containing the same thing. So is it zero price or not? Well, that depends which copy you're talking about. Because everybody's free to redistribute them, so you're free to give away copies if you like, and you're free to sell copies if you like, assuming somebody wants to buy them.
Richard, we're going to take
the market price.
We're going to take a break at this point. And mm-hmm. Stay with us, and we're going to have a couple of short public service announcements, and then we're going to get the callers on the air, okay?
Sure.
computer?
Mm-hmm.
Want to know about the latest electronics?
Yeah.
Are you confused by high-definition TV?
A little.
Well, tune into WBAI every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for the Personal Computer Show.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's every Wednesday on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Oh.
So why don't you tell a friend?
Well, okay.
And tell your boss.
Well.
Hey, call your mom and tell them about the Personal Computer Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Okay. Other questions about my computer?
Have you got questions about your computer?
Knock my coffee over in my keyboard. Do you think that's a problem?
No, not for me.
What does this mean, working right to me?
I'd buy a new one, you know what I mean?
Okay, but you really have got to be there. It's like the best. It's the Personal Computer Show.
Welcome back to the Personal Computer Show. This is Hank Key, and I'm in the studio with Michael Horowitz and Stevie Deeby, and we have up in Perkasie, Dr. Alfred Poor. Our special guest this evening is Dr. Richard M. Stallman, and we're taking phone calls at 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900, and before we start taking the phone calls, Michael, you have a couple of announcements to make?
We have a list of user groups starting out tomorrow, Thursday, December 6th, in Westchester. The Westchester PC User Group has a presentation on wireless networking for your home or small business. They meet at the White Plains Middle School in White Plains, New York. On Friday the 7th, the ICON PC Users Group meets at 6:30 p.m. They have a presentation on high-tech holiday gift guide. Someone from the retail store, PC Richards, will be giving that. They meet at the Brentwood Public Library, which is exit 53 off the Long Island Expressway. In Princeton, the Princeton PC Users Group meets on Monday the 10th. They will be having both a holiday party and a presentation about early computer hobbyists. They meet at the Mercer County Library in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. And on Thursday, December 13th, we have dueling user groups. In Lower Manhattan at NYU, we have the NIAC, which is going to have a presentation also on electronics for the holidays and beyond. They call it Nifty Gifty. They meet at NYU in Manhattan, the Silver Building, Waverly Place. You need an ID card to get into NYU. It's room 808. And one of the Nifty Gifties is the Asus EPC, is it, Hank?
Yes, I'm going to be giving a short presentation on the Asus EPC. I've hacked it for a whole lot of different things, and it's going to be a big surprise to a lot of people. By the way, it's a two-pound, $400 unit.
And it's gotten extremely popular. It's gotten great reviews. It ships with a version of Linux, by the way.
A version of GNU/Linux.
GNU, right. And I've got it running with Windows, and I'm putting a Mac OS on it. And I will probably, by the way, revert back to the original operating system when I'm done with all this, because the GNU Linux is really much more fun to play with.
Now, Hank brought this in to the studio this week and last week. If you haven't seen one of these things, you really want to go to that NIAC user group, because it's an amazing little toy.
It's not a toy.
It's not a toy, yes.
You know what? It looks like a ThinkPad that went through a dryer and got shrunken, you know?
Or if you're not interested in that, at the same time, further uptown, the NYPC users group is going to have their monthly meeting. The presentation starts at 7, doors open at 6. And there are going to be 8 members of NYPC giving assorted tips and tricks.
And, Michael, you're one of the speakers there.
I will be speaking. Everyone gets about 10 minutes, so hopefully it'll run about an hour and a half. I will be speaking about a free security program called Drop My Rights, which is something I think everyone running Windows XP should be using. NYPC meets at PS41, which is on 11th Street near 6th Avenue, which is almost literally a stone's throw from NYU. Finally, on December 21st, the Brookdale Computer User Group meets at 7 p.m. The topic is APUG, CompuKiss, and gadgets. Don't ask me what those things are. They meet at the Brookdale Community College in Lincroft, New Jersey. If you want information about any of these user group meetings, we have all the websites and phone numbers and what have you on our website, which is pcradioshow.org. Just look at the announcements page.
Michael, thank you, and you can catch your breath now. I know you had to go through an awful lot. Hey, Stevie. Whom do we have that we can speak to?
You have a lot of people that you can speak to as usual, but the first person you're going to speak to tonight is Frank, calling from Money Making Manhattan, and he wants to talk about Linux.
A GNU Linux, let's say.
Oh, it has to be GNU Linux?
Yes.
Well, no, it doesn't. Either one, you know.
Okay, well.
Go ahead, Frank.
I bought a version of Linux several years ago. I took a course to learn how to use Linux, and I got so discouraged. First of all, I found that Linux wouldn't work on all computers. You had to buy a special machine to make it work. And second, I went out to one of the local stores and bought some software, games and stuff, and it was impossible to add the software. I couldn't make it come up. Has that changed at all?
Well, first of all, I don't think you're talking about Linux. I think you're talking about the GNU plus Linux combination. And
probably.
Partly it's changed, partly not. I suspect that the programs that you got, because you said you bought them, well, that doesn't prove they're proprietary software, but I would guess they probably are. And they were probably written only to run on Windows.
No, it said Linux.
Well, I don't know.
Okay, no, it did. It said for Linux on the program.
Well, I don't know.
The problem is there are so many different versions of Linux.
Right.
Well, no, there are different versions of GNU slash Linux, because actually Linux is pretty much the same in all of
that. That's the kernel you're talking about.
Right.
Okay.
Linux is the kernel, and that's pretty much the same, but there are differences between GNU slash Linux distributions mainly at other levels. So,
my point being that some software will work with some distributions and not work with other distributions.
It might be so. I really don't know why. Since I don't know what happens, I don't know which distribution he was using or what those programs were, and I probably never heard of them anyway. How could I know? I'm not the person who could answer
Frank,
that question.
Frank, let me ask you the question this way. Since 1992-93, I've been playing around with GNU Linux off and on, and now I'm very enthused because it seems to be much more integrated than before.
Okay.
It is definitely getting easier to use. Very, very much so.
Would I have to go to FSF to buy software for it?
Well, we don't sell much in the way of software. We distribute our software mainly through the net. We used to sell CDs, but I don't know if we bother anymore because people just download it easily enough.
Uh-huh.
But we have a free software directory which lists 5,000 more, actually, useful programs. And these will basically, you could build them from source on your version. And for the common versions of GNU slash Linux, you can probably just install them through package menus and so on.
Frank, if you want to know more about how to get a lot of this for free, why don't you just drop us a line at pcradioshow.org and we'll get some more information to you, and stuff that is perhaps more complicated and that Dr. Stallman can answer, we'll redirect it to him.
Is there a great book that would help me?
Ooh, that's hard. Because there are just so many different distributions.
Right. Okay. They don't always come with a good manual, I don't think.
That's true.
Yeah.
The version I recommend, GNUSense, is actually derived from Ubuntu, which is derived from Debian. And Debian is one of the very widely used versions, so there are probably books about it.
Okay.
Yeah. Look, Debian, Debian.
Computer bookstore downtown Chicago.
And by the way, the simplest one is the Canopics. It's so simple.
But Canopics contains non-free software.
Okay.
It's a sad thing.
He's going to get his freedom in there one way or the other. I congratulate you.
Okay, Frank.
Thank you so much for your help.
Frank, thank you for that call. Mm-hmm. Stevie?
All right, that was pretty good. All right, well, let's go out to Halid. He's calling from Connecticut, and he also wants to speak about Linux.
GNU Linux.
GNU Linux.
Hi there, Halid. How can we help you?
Hi there, Mr. RMS. It is truly a pleasure and an honor to talk to you. We had you a couple years ago in Morocco. You were a guest of ours, and you did an outstanding job. I wanted to ask you a question that has to do with the third world governments and the use of free software. Which system do you think now, given the fact that these governments cannot afford building their own software, what version of GNU Linux and which one do you think they should use?
Well, I think that's sort of a non sequitur. I mean, I don't see why one version rather than another is going to be particularly easier for a government. And governments do develop their own software. Generally, some government agencies will have lots of programs, special purpose programs that they've developed to do one job or another. The hard job of that is often moving it from Windows to GNU/Linux, and Wine might conceivably make that easier, because that way you can run your own programs that you wrote for Windows. But I'm not an expert on migration.
I'm talking in terms of security.
I'm not a security expert either. I've just heard that GNU/Linux generally is pretty good at security, but it's not my field.
Halib, I can answer this way, is that because when you're talking about overseas, you're talking about many, many different languages, and all the different implementations have varying degrees of implementation, so that what may fit fine for one country because of the language differences may be something different for another.
I give you an example. I am from Morocco. I'm very involved in the open source system, philosophy, like you said, not movement, in Morocco, where we try to port a lot of programs into Arabic and also Hebrew, being the script being a little different from other languages. But we are also very, very security oriented. And I wrote a paper once that has to do with government agencies that don't have money, how they can use the free software thing. So I'm just curious which one has all these things that are easy to use in terms of the language port and security.
Well, Dr. Storman had indicated that there's a site that lists all the stuff that is free and that gives.
We only have 5,000 programs listed, but that's not his question. He's not asking which applications are available. He's asking for a comparison between distros. Unfortunately,
that's going to be almost impossible, because everyone has a different criteria.
Right, yeah. So there is really no distro that would be, this one is good. Okay.
Maybe there is. Maybe they all are. The point is, I'm used to comparing the various distros in terms of how they deal with respecting freedom. I'm not used to.
Right.
I don't study them in terms of which one is better at certain security issues. So I'm the wrong person to ask that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for that call, Stevie. Let's get on with the next caller.
All right, let's do that. Let's go out to across the pond and speak with Patrick, calling from Ireland.
Oh, Patrick, how are you? Boy, you must be staying up quite late to listen to us in Ireland.
It's not so much a spatial transformation as a transformation of what I had said to your screener. I think I must have mentioned an island that I was on, but not Ireland.
Oh, what island are you on?
Well, you may have heard it's called Manhattan.
Stevie, you didn't listen. Okay, how can we help you, Patrick?
What was that?
I was wondering. I was puzzled about the free speech as in free speech, not free beer. I was wondering whether free as in thought, not free beer. I had a question that sort of followed up on your previous caller, and that is that in let's say the non United States type world, there's been a big leap in telecommunications over to cell phone. In other words, people didn't really bother with fixed wire; they just went right to this cell phone because that was more suitable for their development programs. I was wondering if there's any particular area in the use of software where you had found, Mr. Solomon, that software could make a similar leap, like maybe Asterisk in telecommunications or PBXs, or I don't know if there's any.
Okay, I think we got the gist of your question, we have to move on quickly because we have a lot of calls, and I don't think we can get to all of them.
I'm an expert on telecommunications software. I just know free software for it exists. So, for instance, the Free Software Foundation, we have a PBX, which is implemented in free software.
An entire PBX?
I think so, except, of course, it has wires, too. But, but basically, it's running on a computer that's free software. I think it's using Asterisk now, but That's about as much as I know about that field.
Okay. Thank you for that call, Patrick. And our next caller is?
Our next caller is Jacob, who's driving, and he's calling into the Personal Computer Show on WBAI New York 99.
Hey, Jacob, I hope you're not driving and talking on the phone at the same time.
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay.
I'm someone who's driving, but thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Good.
I just had a comment and wanted to get your feedback, Doctor. I'm definitely grateful to the open source community for my entire living. But
cool.
We're finding that just relying on open source free software for security is causing major issues due to overseas hacks from Russia, India, China in particular. And how do you see the marriage of business, like paid patching of the open source software going together in the future?
First of all, I don't want to call my software open source because that endorses a philosophy I disagree with.
Okay.
But
Linux by its nature is open source, right?
Well, Linux is just a one piece of the system, so I presume if you've got a whole system, it must be GNU/Linux.
Well, I'm talking about LAMP, the Linux LAMP configuration.
Well, that's also the same misnomer. It's actually the GNU/Linux system with Apache and MySQL and PHP. This is used in web servers.
Yeah.
I'm not a security expert. All I can say is that we're using free software on our website, and it doesn't seem to have been cracked.
I've seen it happen at least 100 times in the last year.
Really?
All software is going to contain bugs that go without saying. You have to keep on top of it, and as patches are released, install them. And that's true no matter what software you're using.
Absolutely, but that's not what I'm referring to. I'm saying the patches that release from the free world, we're seeing a lag behind what people are capable of exploiting in some cases. So my question is, do you see a marriage between paid services and the free software?
Well, support generally you're going to have to pay for if you want to count on it. Of course, you can ask a question on a news group and maybe you'll get an answer, but nobody
sure.
owes you an answer. So if you really want an answer soon, you should go pay somebody to give you the answer, to figure out the answer. One of the advantages, the secondary consequences of freedom that you get with free software is that there is a free market for all kinds of support. And yes, that often means support that you pay for. I'm completely in favor of that.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. That's interesting.
Okay.
We're really grateful to you guys,
by the way. You know, you've really made the community a much better place.
Well, thank you. But remember, because we never were against paying money. It's not gratis. It's not the gratis software movement. So it's not against... We're not against the idea that somebody's paying somebody money to do something.
Okay. Thank you very much for that call, Jacob. And let's move on.
Let's move on to Derek calling from Manhattan.
Hi there, Derek.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Yeah, what I wanted to ask is, the World Wide Web is designed for... Let's say video downloads for either a Mac or the Windows operating systems.
Wait a minute. You could do downloads with any operating system. It's not designed for Windows or Mac.
Well, in some instances, it asks you do you have a Mac or a Windows?
Well, some servers might do that. The World Wide Web as such, I assure you, is designed to be system independent. But you may have encountered websites that do this. I don't know what they're doing, but I just believe you. Since you say you've encountered them, I'm sure it's true.
Right. So what do you do in that instance if you're running a Linux GNU?
You may be out of luck, and this is a big problem. Some video is distributed in secret formats, like with RealPlayer. Well, RealPlayer is non-free software, so you shouldn't use it. Nobody should use it. And so if somebody just distributes it in real player format, that means I'm not going to see whatever it is. If he says I have to install a non-free program in order to look at his video, I'm not going to do that. I could easily do it if I wanted to.
I have one suggestion. I've heard very good things about a software product called VLC. V as in Victor, L as in Larry, C as in Charlie. Apparently, that can handle an awful lot of both audio and video formats.
Okay. And it's free software.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for that call, Derek. And moving on again, Steve, who do we have?
Well, we have Pat calling in from Queens.
Hi there, Pat.
Oh, here she is now. There she is.
Pat, how are you?
Hi. Hello. How are
you? Yes.
It's good to speak with you. I'm glad you accepted my call. Thank you so much.
Okay. How can we help
you? Listen, I don't know anything about computers. I just bought this laptop. They're calling it a notebook. It's a Gateway. And it's MX8741. I'm trying to get the internet. I have cable in my basement, and I'm trying to figure out what's the most inexpensive route to go. They're saying sometimes you can pick up the internet from your neighbor's house. It's wireless, and it is a wireless computer. I don't know if I need a router. I'm trying to know. I don't know
well,
if
first
I need
of all,
MSN.
I'll answer this one. Do you have Time Warner or Verizon putting a modem in your house?
No, they don't. The people, there were some people in my basement. They had cable. It's been cut off. But I have the cable hookup.
Let me put it this way. If you want to steal someone else's signal and it's not a hotspot,
I tried that.
It is not reliable, and there
and
are...
And it's not legal.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Now, there are sites that you can use. Like, you go to a McDonald's, and they have hotspots. You go to Bryant Park, and they have a hotspot that is free.
I don't want to walk with it because it cost me a king's ransom. You know, it's a lot of money, and I don't want to leave my house. I just want to see which is the best way I can get the internet. And the system is already wireless.
I'll tell you what.
I don't know which is the best provider.
It doesn't have to be wireless, because if you're not moving it, you've got to have a hard wire. I would suggest you look at the lowest cost broadband in New York City. It happens to be DSL from Verizon.
DSL?
Yeah.
Isn't that...
It's like $20 a month or $18 a month.
Isn't that dial-up?
No, it's not.
Broadband.
Right.
It does use your phone line, but it's not dial-up.
Yeah.
It's on all the time, just like a cable.
And you can use your phone at the same time.
Yeah, but what I wanted to know is there a way that I can get inexpensive internet without the phone? Because I was going to go...
Yeah, then it's dial-up.
Without the phone.
No, mine is the phone. I want to
DSL.
Now DSL, that would give me, if I contact them, they would be able to... assign the internet system through the cable system.
And they would install.
No. Comes through your phone line.
You don't want to have a phone line in your house?
No, I don't. I don't want it down there because it's going to cost me over $200 to put. The person ripped the phone out of the wire downstairs. It's going to cost me $200 to have a new jack put in, and that's going to be kind of expensive.
Okay. Well, you're either going to have to get the cable company or the phone company to connect your service.
All right. I already have the cable though. Cable is there. I just have to call them up.
Cable is $45 to $50 a month.
So the $200, you'd be in 1 year, you'd be spending more on cable than it would be to spend the $200 to have the phone hooked up.
Okay, so it's less expensive if I just get the phone and get DSL.
And get DSL. It sounds like it.
Yes.
But you ought to check.
Okay.
All right. So what DSL is that? That's not dial up.
No.
It's faster. It's faster than dial up.
Yeah.
Much faster.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. And let's move on quickly. Maybe we can take one or two more calls. Go ahead.
Well, that's one way to do a quick one.
Oh, that was quick.
All right. Well, real quick, let's go to Jenny, and she's calling from Manhattan.
Jenny, how are you?
Hi.
How can we help you? Yes, we hear you.
Oh, hi. Great. I love you guys, and I love your show.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. I am crossing over from Windows Microsoft into the world of Macintosh in a few days, and I plan to go wireless. Now, I live in Manhattan. I was wondering whether I should go with the cable company or should I go to Verizon. What do you recommend?
Well, neither of them really does wireless.
Really?
Well,
unless you're talking about the EVDO network for $60 a month.
No. Well, you can. Either of them will do wireless. You can set up your home network to be wireless.
Right. You have to install
but it starts out with a wire in your home or office.
It brings a wire into your house, and then from there you can put a wireless connection.
Oh, I see. So even though I have cable from Time Warner.
Right. The Time Warner will give you a very fast access, but it's going to be around $45 to $50
a month.
So what is your suggestion then?
You know what I would do? I would call Verizon and Time Warner and say, I'm shopping, give me the particulars, and then make a value judgment after you talk to both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay, thanks very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
And let's try to get that one last call in.
Okay, let's do that. Let's talk to Bill, and Bill is calling from Boston.
Bill, from Boston. Boy, you're a stone's throw from Dr. Stormin.
Yes. in the general area.
Okay, how can we help you?
I just wanted to respond to one of the previous callers that were having problems with their security on a so-called LAMP system. And I was just wanted to comment that, like, usually those problems are caused not by the actual software, which is pretty stable and has been well documented, but, you know, usually that's a problem more of the code that's being used. So a lot of, like, the security flaws are caused by, what's called SQL injections and other types of things that, loopholes that allow hackers to, malicious hackers, I should say, to exploit security loopholes and destroy things.
So what you're saying is people. It's not the code, it's the people.
And it's complicated software, so there's an awful lot of configuration options.
Listen, we're going to have to take leave at this time. Thank you for the call, Bill.
Thank you.
Richard, do you have any final words for us?
Nothing is more important than your freedom. The only way we'll keep our freedom is if we're prepared to defend it.
I agree with you. And by the way, I was thinking what we should do is get you in touch with John Wiley, and you should write a book called GNU Linux for Dummies.
Well, I wrote a book of essays that are in a book, and it's called Free Software, Free Society. And you can buy it from the Free Software Foundation. Go to fsf.org.
Great. Thank you very much. And we hope to have you on the air at some future time. And hopefully we've made some progress where more people are educated on what free software really means. Thank you very much. And Alfred?
Yes, sir.
You can go back under your blanket now. I know it's cold.
Go start shoveling.
Yeah. Shoveling? You got snow?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh. Well, Stevie, thank you. Thank you, Michael, for being in the studio. And this is Hank Key. And we will be back next week with another edition of the Personal Computer Show. Same time, same station. And thank you for listening.
You've been listening to The Personal Computer Show, brought to you over the facilities of WBAI-FM in New York City. Tune in to The Personal Computer Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM or go to www.pcradioshow.org to subscribe to the podcast or download previously broadcast programs.